I'm going to talk about the species that Judy just talked about, Larinus minutus, and also on diffuse snapweed. But I'm going to talk about it, how it interacts with Cyphocleonis, a root-feeding insect that's present on the plant. And the question is, how are these two getting along? So just an outline, I'm going to go over some knapweed biocontrol history in Canada, biology of Cyphocleonis and Larinus, their life cycles and how they interact, the experimental setup that we used to look at this, and talk about Cyphocleonis impact, and then finally, what does Larinus do in response to Cyphocleonis? It's going to be somewhat of a course estimate in terms of Larinus, but you'll see more about that in a minute. So knapweed biocontrol, Judy gave it a good introduction. I'll just repeat a few things and add. We've got two diffuse and spotted knapweed, early targets for biocontrol that began in the 60s, first release in 1970 by Peter. 22 different agents screened, 12 released, 9 established, 6 that are really pretty common and you can find them. And so most of that work was done in BC. I'm in the next province over. I also work in BC. We have monitoring sites there on spotted knapweed. But in Alberta, there's been a much more aggressive control program, spray program, to try and limit the spread of knapweed. And it has had some success, although more recently, when I moved to Alberta in 1998, I was told there was no knapweed, so I worked on leafy spurge. But as you drive around in Alberta and the river valleys and such, there's lots of knapweed. And the thing about it is it gives us an opportunity to look at biocontrol over again to a certain extent, because the only agents that are there on knapweed, if you can convince people to let you release the other agents, first of all, the flies are there, the Europhora flies, but trying to get permission to release new things when it's a noxious weed and they're spraying it out everywhere, supposedly, took a while. But anyway, it gives us the chance to sort of rerun things, the experiment, sort of like what Judy was talking about in the fire. So with knapweed biocontrol, you've got multiple agents out there. Judy's mentioned this. Limited impact data, a lot of anecdotal stuff, before and after photos. It was there, but now it's gone. And as many people have talked about throughout this meeting and today, the costs and risks of biocontrol, we want to be trying to minimize those costs. Every agent adds to the exploration costs and screening and such, and also to the risks that might happen. And we really need to understand the interactions between the agents that we have. Knapweed, because there's so many out there, is a good system to maybe try and learn about what we should be doing in future biocontrol programs. To do prescriptive releases, maybe only releasing the one agent that's going to be most effective. So the questions that we were looking at here was, first of all, does Cyphocleonis, the root weevil, have an impact on diffuse knapweed plants? And if so, what would be the interaction with the seed head feeder, Larinus, which you see on over there? So, Cyphocleonis biology, and I just want you to keep track of the timing here during the season, because that's important to the experiment, the way we set it up. It was released in BC in 1987. The adult emerges in August, lays its eggs in the root crown in September. The larvae then overwinter in the root during the winter. As small larvae, they do some more feeding in the spring, and then they come out in June and July. The main damage is via larval feeding on the roots, and also there is some adult feeding on rosettes when the adults emerge. Larinus, adults emerge in June. The eggs are laid in early July on the flowering buds. They pupate in August, and then they come out before the winter, and they're flying around, they overwinter as adults. And Judy's given some excellent photographs and description of what sort of damage that they do. So the experimental design that we did started in 2006 in August with 30 of these corrals where we took the pre-release rosette density. We just put them out went to the field site and put them out, making sure that we had a minimum of 5 rosettes in each corral. There were 10 replicates, and into each of those we released either 0, 2, or 6 pairs of Cyphocleonis. And we blocked by rosette densities. The rosette densities went up to something like about 85 rosettes per corral. So there was a lot of variation, and we blocked those treatments across that variation. The idea was that we were setting the table in 2006 with the Cyphocleonis attack, and then the Cyphocleonis In 2007, we would go back and release Larinus beside the corrals and see what sort of choices they would make about the plants that were available and what after Siphocleonis, if it was going to do something, had done something, both to the diffuse knapweed density in the corrals and also perhaps to the structure of the plants, the diffuse plants. So then this past fall, we came back, harvested all the bolted plants from those corrals, took the Siphocleonis density estimate, and we also collected plant information in terms of plant height, stem, number of stems, stem diameters, root crown diameters, number of heads, and then we did what is a crude estimate of Larinus density to see what Larinus had done after Siphocleonis had been there by itself, sort of thing. Now, the reason we did this, or that we started thinking about this, was in population surveys with spotted knapweed sites in BC, we had noticed several times over that there was a relationship between Larinus and the root feeders. Basically, in plants where you had Siphocleonis versus plants where you didn't have Siphocleonis, there was more Larinus per plant. Non-significant in this particular case, but in other cases was significant. And in terms of Agapetta, you have plants with Agapetta and you got more Larinus. Plants without Agapetta, you got less Larinus. But the problem with this in terms of population monitoring, are they all just choosing big plants? So we set up this experiment to try and separate those things out. The other point was that in terms of any other seedhead feeders, Europhra, Metzenaria, we never saw this sort of relationship. So again, because there's all this, obviously Larinus is an important insect, we were wondering what's going on. So that's sort of what got us to set up this experiment. Unspotted, but the idea came there. So what happened? Well, first thing, in the fall of 2007, in terms of, where's the pointer? Okay. In terms of, we got the mean Siphocleonis density, and happily, where there was, whoops, where there was no Siphocleonis was significantly, the number of Siphocleonis was higher based on the amount that we released. So if we hadn't had that, we would have been stuck. But there were significant differences in Siphocleonis based on treatment. In terms of plant density, because it was only 1 year after we had released the insects, we weren't really holding our breath on that one, that anything would show up. But there was, in this case, with the treatment density 0, 2, and 6, mean number of bolted plants in the corrals, there was a slight reduction in the number of bolted plants in the higher density Siphocleonis release. So a small effect, but fewer plants where you had more Siphocleonis, which is encouraging in terms of impact and somewhat surprising to us. I think when Jim Story did a similar experiment, it was 2 years after the fact on spotted knapweed where that sort of effect started to show up. So we weren't really expecting that. Where we did get the big impact was in terms of the mean plant height within the treatment cages versus the, or within the release versus the control. So mean height without Siphocleonis was about 68 centimeters versus about 48 when you had your highest density of Siphocleonis. So quite a big impact on those bolted plants. So what's going to happen when Larinus comes in to do its overposition? In terms of the, so obviously Larinus attacks heads. What's the impact on the number of seed heads that are there? Again, a slight effect of the treatment, 0, 2, and 6, on the total number of heads per cage. But if you fit the covariates of plant height and the pre-release density was non-significant, but plant height was the significant driver to this. So in other words, the effect on heads is occurring because of the change in height that we saw, not because there's a direct effect on the number of seed heads that are out there. And you can see here, there is a relationship between the number of, between plant height on the horizontal axis and the number of seed heads that you get on a plant, not too surprisingly. But remember that Siphocleonis is knocking down that height, so if they're knocking down that height, there's going to be fewer seed heads out there for the Larinus. A second subtler and not as strong effect on seed head production of Siphocleonis was that the plants with Siphocleonis had more multiple stemming. So if you look at, it's basically 18% where Siphoclonus is present, 18% of the plants had multiple stems versus 9%. So it's not a huge effect, but it is significant and it is there. And plants that have multiple stemming have fewer heads. Obviously, again, bigger plants have more heads. We have the total stem diameter here, which is a measure of that multi-stemming. If you add up all the stems on an individual plant, then obviously the total stem diameters are going to be bigger. And here we have the total number of seed heads. So as you get bigger plants, generally you get more heads. But if you take the same plant size, say at 2 here, run it up to the regression lines, the blue are the multi-stem plants, the black are the single-stem plants, you're going to have fewer heads for the same size plant. So in other words, there is a slight effect of this multi-stemming, again, reducing the number of seed heads available for Larinus by Siphoclonus. So summarizing what Siphoclonus did, does it have an impact on the plant? Yes, it does. There was a small impact on the bolting plant density 1 year after the release. There was a significant reduction in plant height, which resulted in reduced seed heads. And then there was an increase in the number of multi-stemming or biomass, and it reduced seed heads, probably because the reduction is they're putting more energy into stems rather than seeds. That's just a suggestion. So, well, after all of this, what did Larinus do? And this is one of those cases where you say, yeah, I'll talk, and we have this great experiment going, and then the data doesn't come out quite the way you had hoped. But because what we had hoped to do in the fall was estimate Larinus attack rates strictly based on emergence holes. And that works really well most times with spotted plants, but it didn't work very well with diffuse plants here. A lot of the plants, when we looked at them, they may have had attack, but the heads were closed up tight and you couldn't quickly do it. So what we had planned to do anyway was dissections, and we're going to have to do that to confirm this. But anyway, on this graph we have the mean number of heads per plant. The black dots are the control cages, i.e. no Siphoclonus. The blue are the 2 release and the pink are the 6 release. And then we have the mean Larinus, the mean number of Larinus per plant. And what you can see here, we think we've underestimated the Larinus attack rate in the cages. But for when we went through and did these counts on the heads, the number of emergence holes on the head, there is a pattern that it's the control sites that are all there with the high Larinus counts. And there is somewhat of a relationship here. Now, don't hold your breath on it, but we have to do the dissections to see if it'll fill in. And our suspicion is it will, in terms of that you're going to see a reduction in the attack rate of Larinus because of the, based on the number of heads. This is also based, this is another site in the same area where there was a Larinus release, diffuse plants. And here we have plant height on the horizontal and the total number of Larinus in 20 heads. And there is a significant relationship here in terms of that smaller plants have less Larinus. So using that, we're suggesting we're back at the frustrating data here, but instead I've changed the axis now to that same Y, mean total plant height. And again, you can see re-expressing it that way, there's still what looks like there's going to be a relationship there to the mean number of Larinus per cage. So we have to obviously, in terms of answering to that second question, given the impact, what does the interaction with the seed head feeder, it looks to us, what we're suggesting is that Larinus density will be indirectly reduced via the plant effects in the presence of Siphoclonus. And we have to do the dissections, which are ongoing right now, to try and confirm this, or to see if we're right. But from the field data that we have, it looks promising. So what's the significance of all this for knapweed biocontrol? First point is that Siphoclonus can cause mortality of bolted knapweed plants. And others, I think, have observed this as well. It can significantly affect diffuse knapweed seed production, and we're suggesting that it will likely reduce Larinus attack rates. The big question is the overall seed head reduction going to be additive between the two species, or are they going to be competitive? And unfortunately, I can't give a firm answer to that today. I think from our experience with this that Cyphocleonis may be a little bit different than Spinoptera because it doesn't fly. You put it in a place, it stays there, and it just sort of chugs along. And I think it's more likely to have mortality effects on the knapweed than Spinoptera will. And it may be a better agent. And the other point about it is I don't think there's any doubt that Larinus is a very good biocontrol agent, but my experience with spotted knapweed in the Kootenays in BC is that we're not seeing a lot happening there with these agents. And I suspect that it's one thing to talk of silver bullets, but I think we might need a couple of them in for different places. That's the sort of, and in this case, because Cyphocleonis can have the impact that we observed here, I think it may be one of the second bullet, maybe. So I'll finish with that, with just acknowledging people that helped do the field sampling and the work and funding. Thanks very much.